There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Arseblog 20 podcast series, in which we celebrate 20 years of Arseblog by talking to a guest about a calendar year of the site's existence between 2002 and 2022. The year in question is 2017, and with me to talk about it from the Football Ramble, it's Jim Campbell. Hi there.
Hello and happy birthday.
Thank you. What a milestone. It's I don't know what to say about it. It's just a bizarre thing to be doing this 20 years down the line, you know?
Yeah, well, you're lucky to have a club that provides enough bizarre material, right?
This is true. There's never a dull moment when it comes to Arsenal. I know we were talking about this a bit offline, and by the time this goes out, some of the stuff we were talking about is not going to be relevant, but I'm absolutely sure that it will be replaced by more madness.
Yeah, quite. Absolutely.
So we're talking 2017, pretty eventful year. Where do you want to kick off?
So the first entry to this, funnily enough, actually happened on New Year's Day. It's a moment all of us will remember very, very fondly. It's when Olivier Giroud scored that scorpion kick that is probably the cherry on top of what is an unbelievable highlight reel of goals that the man has scored throughout his career. And the context of it is funny to sort of look back on it now, especially given how everything played out, because Henrik Mkhitaryan had scored a similar goal for Man United on Boxing Day.
Yeah.
And it then became a little conversation about which goal was better in terms of the technique and whatnot. But if you look back at them now, obviously I'm very biased here, but that actually rounded off a really, really good team goal. Whereas with the United one, it was just a, you know, bog standard run-of-the-mill Commonwealth Garden cross from Zlatan Ibrahimovic. So it's fine, it's good. But Giroud's was better. And it was just... It was one of those moments that sort of transcends rivalries, doesn't it? Where like football sits up and goes, you know what? That was something really, really special there.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it does depend. Like, you know, I'm loath to give, for example, any Tottenham player any credit for anything that they might do, regardless of the quality of it. And I still maintain to this day that the Lamella goal was just one of the most overrated things I've ever seen. But I agree with you about the Giroud goal when it comes to comparisons with Henrik Mkhitaryan, because it did start, was it Jack Wilshere or Lucas Perez? I think somebody like that made a tackle deep to win the ball, and we moved it up the pitch really well. And yeah, I mean, what a finish.
It's actually a pretty poor cross from Alexis Sanchez as well.
Well, I mean, behind him.
Ridiculously behind him. But that didn't matter for old Ollie. He was so good at that stuff, and obviously remains really good at that stuff. His mobility is something that I think is really, really kind of underrated. And we actually interviewed him for the book club podcast that we do, which was quite the thing because, I mean, we all have that thing on Zoom where you can't sort of... stop looking at the little picture of yourself in the side and feeling self-conscious about it. When you got Olivier Giroud on the line, that is so much worse. Just like that is kind of so much harder to accept your own face in that context. But there we are.
I mean, he did score some brilliant goals for us. And you know what's kind of funny is there was this perception at the time when we had him, when he was a regular 20-goal-a-season goal scorer. That's what he gave you pretty much every season. 20 goals across all competitions, I know, maybe a little more, maybe a little less, but there or thereabouts, there was a consistency to what he delivered. And everyone was like, oh, we need more. We need something different. Yeah. We need something better. We need, you know... And I do wonder if, in hindsight, one of the signings that happened in 2017 was Alexandre Lacazette, which then, you know, precipitated the departure of Giroud when we brought Aubameyang in the January. And I just wonder, you know, Arsene Wenger, I'm sure, has some regrets when he thinks about some of the decisions that he made. I just wonder if that is one where he might think, you know what, maybe Aubameyang that summer, as well as Giroud, was probably the better way to do that bit of transfer business.
Wasn't it the case that Giroud had to leave for us to be able to get Aubameyang through some sort of complicated machinations? It's a shame, isn't it, that we weren't in a position where we could have just had them both, because he's, as much as it must frustrate him, in fact, I know it frustrates him, you know, he gives you great depth. I mean, he obviously wants to start every game, but he's phenomenal from the bench, and he's so good at bringing other players in. And actually, looking back at 2017, his name comes up a lot in the good moments, as oddly does Theo Walcott's. I mean, Theo Walcott's a player, again, who I think history might be a little bit kinder to him than his present was at the club, because he scored over 100 goals for Arsenal. I know he was there for a long time and he joined very young, but those two players in what was a very, very difficult season really chipped in. And you think of Ozil and Sanchez in these years for obvious reasons, because they were both brilliant and both very eye-catching, but they weren't the only players kind of weighing in. And I think, you know, Giroud's legacy will be probably, you know, really tied up with this particular goal, and it was a fitting kind of moment for such a good player.
I think that goal did win the Puskas Award that year, didn't it, as the best goal of the season. Certainly,
I would hope so.
Yeah, and like I feel like it's a shame he went to Chelsea, and I feel like it's a shame that he, you know, scored with such frequency for Chelsea, particularly in the Europa League final, his contribution in that game and his enjoyment of that, which I understand on a personal level. I just feel like it's a shame. You know, a guy like him where, you know, he did his best. He was limited in certain areas, but, you know, you'd like to see him go on and do well, but do well for AC Milan or do well for Valencia or Sevilla or somebody. Don't go to a club like Chelsea. Yeah.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it hurts a lot less than an Ashley Cole or even a Cesc Fabregas, who had that one degree of separation for some reason. Because I think it was just like, you kind of felt, oh, fair enough, you know, he's got a contract at a club that will compete as he's kind of advancing. But it still stung, that goal in particular.
Yes. So go on. What have we got next from 2017?
So the second one, and I hate to make you relive this, Andrew, but I feel that it is such a significant point in Arsenal's 2017, but also really as to where we are now. And it's those two games against Bayern Munich where we lost 10-2 on aggregate. And I think that was really the zenith of the modern problems. And also, I mean, it's the last Champions League game we played.
Yeah.
Which is kind of horrible to think about, but it is. And it was such a chastening defeat both times. And I think it's a proper microcosm of a lot of the problems that the club had. Because obviously we touched on players like Alexis Sanchez and Mesut Ozil. When they really heralded a new dawn, when those players came in, we thought, hey, we might start competing for trophies again. And then we won some cups and it actually started happening. But at the same time, this season, the 2016-2017 season, obviously half of which was in 2017, they were the debut seasons for Granit Xhaka and also for Skodran Mustafi, who we paid £35 million for, which is amazing. And there's a point in the first game where Lewandowski essentially uses Mustafi just as like a ladder to get a header in. And it's watching it back now, you really see how disjointed that team was, and how some of those players, as has been the case far too much in recent years, were essentially sticking plasters on what were quite badly festering wounds. And in that period as well, around the time of losing those two games, we've beaten 3-1 convincingly by Liverpool. We lost to Liverpool fairly convincingly from their end. We were beaten 3-1 by West Bromwich Albion. And you look back at it and you think, I don't know how many current managers would survive that. And it really, now we've got some distance from it. It is amazing what Wenger weathered, really. And I don't think we'll ever see a situation where a manager is so ingrained in a club that they almost become unsackable despite things like that. And not that I'm saying that he should necessarily have been unceremoniously dumped. I think the way it was eventually done was, you know, a bit late, but was as respectful as it could have been. But it still hurts looking back at these games, because it could have been more as well. David Ospina was our best player in the first leg. We lost the game 5-1 because Szczęsny went off injured in that game and he was sent off in the second game.
Was and that's harsh another one as well, that, wasn't it?
Again, with a little. Sorry,
it was a harsh sending off too.
I think it was.
Yeah, it was.
But again, it's one of those things where, with a little bit of distance from it. Now, I love Laurent Koscielny as a player. He was an excellent player and a real warrior for us. He put his body on the line when it was really breaking down at times as well. But he got 5 red cards for Arsenal, conceded 8 penalties. So even as one of our more kind of reliable players, he did have that in him where there was a dropped testicle or a rick not too far away. And when those are your guys who are, like, you know, among the first names on the team sheet, it eventually invites catastrophe, and everything that could have gone wrong did go wrong in these games. Like Arjen Robben with his fucking Hadouken of cutting in from the left and scoring.
What's
like,
he going to do here? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's that again, but yeah. It's gone in again. Unreal.
I watched the video that you sent me of the highlights. There's a video which I'll maybe put in the show notes for this particular episode of the two legs. And you mentioned the first Lewandowski goal where he uses Mustafi as a stepladder. Watch the second goal. I think it's a Thiago goal. And there's a beautiful flick by Lewandowski on the edge of the box. The ball comes across. He flicks it first time, sort of behind the defense. But watching this now, I'm amazed that the red flags about Mustafi didn't start, you know, ringing with us earlier. For that goal, he's, as the play is coming towards our box, he's, I think, looking at the right back, and he's telling the right back, just keep an eye on what's happening. Just watch what's happening here, while fucking Thiago ghosts inside him, and he doesn't have a fucking clue where he is. Like, literally not a clue. And it's one of those classic ones where afterwards, his mistake, and he's like waving his arms around. It's like, what the, oh my God, how could you do this? I mean, that should have set the alarm bells ringing. And it's just consolidated, like, my firmly held belief that pound for pound, when it comes to transfer fee and everything else, he is the worst central defender I have ever seen in my life.
I would completely agree. Because also, I think at the time he was essentially the worst defender in the league. He was costing us goals. That Crystal Palace game where he seemed to have a really nice time watching Wilfried Zaha, but the rest of us didn't, because they beat us quite handily, didn't they? And it was absurd. That was the season in which he marked a referee as well. Do you remember that? It was Craig Pawson. There's amazing photos of him, like, really dedicatedly trying to block off Craig Pawson, who's just laughing. It's like, how, 35 million, they saw us come in. Unreal. The one thing I am grateful for, looking back on this game, is that Bayern, when they scored their goals, they were playing Seven Nation Army, the White Stripes song that's become a football anthem in various guises. But they went through a period, I'm not sure whether it was before this or after it, they've done it a few times, so it could well have been both, where when they scored a goal at home, they would play the music, like the can-can music, which I think might be the smuggest thing that has ever happened in world football. And it is so funny. I love it so much because it's just so dismissive of the opposition. Like, you know, you are here for the entertainment of the crowd. You are simply here for us to just embarrass you. And while I love seeing that happen to other teams because it is so amusing, I couldn't have handled that 5 times.
Look, I mean, I think the interesting point, as you made earlier on, is like what this defeat meant, or what it signified, or what it indicated about where we were going and what was happening. Because that second leg, we scored first. Theo Walcott scored a goal. Yeah. And I was looking at it going, it's half time. It's 5-2 on aggregate now. I mean, you never know. And then the Koscielny red card happens. And then there's all kinds of mistakes and the defending is terrible. I can't remember if it's Mustafi that comes on for Koscielny or somebody comes on, but Mustafi's there. And it's just, you know, it is part of the decline. A fairly, like, sometimes you get slapped with a reality that you're not quite aware of at the time. But when you look back at it, losing 5-1 twice in a row to Bayern Munich, this is Arsenal in the Champions League. You know, for years and years and years of experience in this competition, even with a disjointed team, we should have been better than that. You know.
Yeah, and it is a real indication looking back that this cycle is done and there needs to be a quite serious reset of everything about the club. And again, like, I don't want to, you don't know what's around the corner, do you? But one of the refreshing things about this season is it does feel like, okay, this is the start of a new era, And there are going to be teething problems. There are going to be bumps in the road. Of course there are, but it feels like the days of those sticking plaster players perhaps over. Actually, there's a really interesting indication of that in the FA Cup final as well, which is what I want to kind of come on to for another point as well, which is that David Luiz and Willian are in that Chelsea team that we beat.
Yeah.
And it's so weird watching that now, because they were two, like Luiz less, but still quite dramatically so in some ways. Mm. They were, again, emblematic of these sticking plaster players that you are getting just because there's no one else, or because it seems like a short-term solution to what is a long-term problem. We seem to be moving away from that situation now, which is great. And that second FA Cup win was something really, really special. Now, it was I watched it in really strange circumstances, because we were doing a Football Ramble live show at the Hackney Empire that night. Mm. And obviously you book these shows a long, long time before you end up doing them. So I had no idea who would be in the FA Cup final, and it happened to be two London teams. And for a while it looked like it was going to go to extra time. And it was like, are people actually going to come to the show if this goes to extra time? We're going to have to, like, there was no real option to push it back. So it was really, really tense. And it was just Aaron Ramsey, absolute hero, saved us on the night, as well as winning the cup for Arsenal. And the crowd were unreal. They were so drunk. It was like it was like doing a sort of like the kind of like scary old working men's clubs that, you know, like old comedians tell horror stories about. Like that for a show. It was great. It was so much fun, and it was a brilliant day, as it always is when you win silverware. But yeah, that it was so memorable for that reason. And also on a personal level as well, Arsenal, they were in the doldrums at this point of time, and this coincided with a really turbulent time in my own personal life. And the nature of our podcast means that, you know, if a team are performing badly, they get the piss taken out of them. Mm. And also, by proxy, that's me getting the piss taken out of me. Like, because, and you know, that's I'm not complaining about that. That is simply what our show is, and that's how it should be. But it was just like, oh God, come on, Arsenal, come on. Like, just give me a break, guys. And then for them to win the FA Cup was such a relief. It's such a beautiful release, isn't it? Because you've won it for a year. You know, when you win a game, you feel like, brilliant. We've won this game all week, or we've won it to the next game. But actually having silverware, obviously you've won it forever, but you hold it for a year.
Yeah.
And that's a great feeling.
It was, I mean, the FA Cup run that year, I think we beat, was that where we played Sutton United and then Manchester City in the semi-final? I mean, this was Pep Guardiola's Manchester City that we played in the semi-final. I think Nacho Monreal scored a goal, if I remember. We had a fairly kind run, I think, Preston, Southampton, Sutton United, Lincoln. But then you've got to play Man City. Man City go ahead. Nacho Monreal scores. Alexis Sanchez scores. A really scrappy kind of goal, but, you know, they all count. And then that final, when it looked like we didn't have a central defender to our name, because Lauren Koscielny got sent off in the last Premier League game of the season against Everton. So he's suspended.
He did.
Gabriel, I think, had an injury of some description. Mustafi, I mean, the only thing I'll say about Mustafi is that he timed injuries to miss cup finals perfectly. he did it in 2017, and he did it in 2020 as well. If you remember, there was an injury a couple of games before the cup final. This one, I think he had some kind of concussion, I guess, you know, any kind of blow to his head gets that little brain rattling around. And it meant that Per Mertesacker, who hadn't played all season long, at the last second is called up to anchor a three-man defense with Rob Holding and Nacho Monreal, like Wenger playing a back three, which he rarely did. I know he experimented with it a bit during the last few years of his reign when things weren't going right. He switched formations to try and make things happen. But Mertesacker, having not played all season long, to be up against, you know, a Chelsea side, which was pretty decent, like you said, Diego Costa in there. This was a very experienced Chelsea team. So I think that aspect of the final is an amazing thing because of, you know, you come in at his age with his injury problems. I mean, it's Chelsea with Hazard and Kante and Fabregas on the bench. Willian came on as a substitute. You know, I mean, What a performance from Mertesacker.
And from Rob Holding as well. Yeah. Do you remember back when he had his own hair? The talk after the game was that they did a sort of good cop, bad cop thing Per Mertesacker would be like really weirdly friendly and just get on with it. And Rob Holding, the sort of young upstart, just sledging everyone left, right and centre. And apparently it really rattled Diego Costa, who as like a, you know, as someone who prides himself on his shithousery, must have been an extra sort of blow for him, which I'm all in favour of as often as possible.
Yeah, I mean, I remember Martin Keown saying, I think he might have been critical of Mertesacker in the build up to the game, whatever it is, or maybe a bit dismissive of him. And afterwards, there was some footage where he goes, "This is the Per Mertesacker final," and Mertesacker was like, "Yeah, you know, you don't write me off." An amazing sort of swan song to a career for a guy, you know, to come in and play a game at that level. You know, just one of those amazing performances and an amazing day, you know, to win the cup, but to win the cup against Chelsea, Aaron Ramsey, once again, the hero in an FA Cup final. You know, we forget what a scabby goal Chelsea scored as well. Not sure David Ospina covered himself in a great deal of glory for that one, but within a couple of minutes, Aaron Ramsey is up the other end and heading in with a cross from...
Who was it from?
Olivier Giroud, who'd come on as a substitute for Danny Welbeck. So, you know, again, when you're talking about some of the good things that happened in 2017, having a bit of Giroud shine to them, this is another one of them.
Yeah, very much so. He just delivered, didn't he? He had end product to him. So this was a very, very weird year. And I want to try and kind of, for the last point, do something of a positive, really. And I might have to do some gymnastics to do that. But we'll see how we get on. It's actually the opening day of the 2017 season, 2017-18 season against Leicester, which was an absolutely mad game, which kind of was really, really topsy-turvy. We ended up winning it 4-3 with a late goal from, you guessed it, Olivier Giroud. And it was one of those games where, definitely one of the games of the season, which is mad for a kind of curtain raiser, where it encapsulated everything frustrating about Arsenal and everything mesmerising about them. Because they can be exceptional in two very, very different ways. And both of those ways were on display in this game. Very, very topsy-turvy. The nervousness of the crowd is obviously always a factor when Arsenal look like they're going to, you know, just collapse. And then they did collapse. And then they fought back. And it worked. And it was a last-minute winner. And one of the best things in football, last-minute winner, obviously. Yeah. I think it's just a really, again, it's a proper little time capsule moment. You look back at that team with its kind of all its flaws, but all its magic in it as well. And it's just a reminder of some of the roller coaster that time was, really.
Yeah, I mean, Lacazette was signed that summer for 50 million thereabouts and scored, what was it, a minute and a half into the game?
One of the quickest debut goals. I think in an official game.
Yeah, I remember the game well. It was quite an amazing game. I mean, the rest of the season didn't obviously pan out that well. But, I mean, there are a few things I think we could talk about quickly about that year that are worth talking about that aren't necessarily so positive, but, again, come back to this idea that Arsenal were a club that were, if not coasting, sort of lacked some direction. So that was the first year under Wenger that we didn't finish in the top four. And we dropped out of the Champions League and we haven't been back since. And there was the whole Alexis Sanchez saga that summer, where we spent all summer long talking about how we're going to hold on to him. We're not going to let him go. We're going to keep him for the last year of his contract. We're not going to sell him. He clearly wanted to go, and we were playing hardball and saying, well, no, you can't go. We need you. Play one more season, whatever it was, whatever the rationale was. And then, like, right at the last minute, do you remember the Man City bid came in and it looked like it was going to go through to Man City, and we bid crazy money for Thomas Lemar, who was at Monaco at the last minute. And this sort of flip-flop on where this, like, strong position, whether you agreed with it or not, the fact that we had a really strong position around this whole scenario with Alexis Sanchez, like, you kind of have to respect that. You might disagree, you might not, but at least your position is, this is what we're doing. But then, like, right at the last minute, it flipped and we really annoyed a key player who was like utterly demotivated at that point, to the point where in January, you know, people thought an Alexis Sanchez, Henrik Mkhitaryan swap was a good idea.
Yeah, and also what a rare thing, a swap deal in football that actually happened.
Yeah.
You see them move all the time, but they never happened. But yeah, it was a mess, wasn't it? And I think it's obviously, we're only going on what we hear in the press, and I'm sure like not everything that that goes on is reported to the press in quite extreme measures, but it looks like the transfer strategy was completely reactive. Just very, very little thought behind it. It's like, oh, a player's leaving, so a player needs to come in.
Yeah.
Are they going to fit? Like, Thomas Lamar, you know, I mean, it's not like he's really pulled up trees for Atletico. I mean, it's not like he's a complete failure, but
yeah,
certainly you couldn't compare him to Alexis Sanchez as he was in that iteration of his form. And again, it's just a refreshing thing now where you can see a transfer strategy in place. It was for too long, it felt like, you know, Arsenal would start building something and then you would lose those players and you've got to start again. And then you've got this Frankenstein's monster of you know, attempts at building some sort of dreamlike team that just never sort of came to fruition. And that's what I hope we can actually do now, is keep these players together for as long as possible to actually build something that's a cohesive unit. Because it was just so frustrating for a long time.
Yeah.
It felt compromised in so many ways. You felt like you'd watch an Arsenal starting 11 and there'd be a Mustafi in there, or there'd be sort of some ex-Chelsea player just picking up a wave, and you'd think, oh, like, only like 9 of these players really count to me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That sounds really weird, but it just didn't feel whole.
Yeah, I know what you mean. A couple of funny ones. Well, funny, I guess. At the start of the year, back in January, Granit Xhaka was sent off by John Moss, if you remember, for a foul that was clearly a foul, but not a red card. I've never seen a red card given for that before or since. And there were some comments.
It really set the kind of tone for Xhaka.
That was another one, yeah. That was the start of the, if that was Granit Xhaka, cycle.
Yeah.
But there were some comments from Arsene Wenger where he said, he's not naturally a great tackler in his decision-making, but it's more the way he tackles is not really convincing. He doesn't master well the technique of tackling. I would encourage him not to tackle, to stay on his feet. That's the best way to deal with it. Tackling is a technique you learn at a young age. You can improve it, but when you're face-to-face with somebody, it's better you stay up. I mean, those are words of wisdom that, like, if Granit Xhaka had paid even the slightest bit of attention to what Arsene Wenger said then, he would probably be in a different place now in his career.
Yeah. It seems to be what he's taken from that is, it's fine to be bad at this.
Because
that applies today, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, it's exactly, you could apply that same conversation to him like 3-4 times a season. My advice is, don't tackle.
Just, in that position as well. Just don't worry about it. Just, you know, do something else.
The final thing I want to talk about is a 4-game ban for Arsene Wenger from the touchline after a bust-up after our win over Burnley. It was one of those crazy games. I think there was like a 98th-minute penalty or something like that that Alexis Sanchez scored.
Yeah.
But there was a set-to on the sideline between Arsene Wenger and fourth official Anthony Taylor. And I just think reading this bit out is quite funny, because Anthony Taylor at a later date explained what happened. And he said, following the award of a penalty kick against his team in approximately the 92nd minute, Mr. Wenger left his technical area to confront me in disagreement at the decision. Before he said anything, I said, think carefully before you say anything. He responded by saying, you are dishonest to your federation. I considered this to be questioning both mine and the referee John Moss's integrity and impartiality. I stated to Mr. Wenger that such a comment was not acceptable, and he told me to fuck off on 2 separate occasions.
As well, like, think carefully about what you say. Does he think he's a fucking sheriff? Like, just the opinion these guys have of themselves sometimes is staggering, isn't it? When you see it in writing like that.
It's good that 5 years down the line, the refereeing standards have improved immeasurably. Yeah. We don't have to think about these things anymore.
No, thank goodness. Actually, one thing about the opening game of the 2017 season is there is a very, very blatant handball that we should have had a penalty for that would be given all day now because of VAR. And as much as it has its detractors, and rightly so because it's implemented so badly so often, it is a little reminder of how frustrating it was before we had it as well, and that there's obviously a little bit of give and take in that situation as well.
All right. Well, look, thank you for reliving some of the moments of 2017 with me, Jim. Really appreciate it. Good luck with all you do on the Football Ramble, and we'll chat to you soon.
Cheers.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
It's a brand new year, and what better time to get going with that online store you've been thinking of? Those "I was there when Arsenal actually scored a goal" t-shirts would fly off the shelves right now. And to get yourself up and running, you need Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way through to the did we hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms, and sell more with less effort with thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 a month trial period at shopify.com/arsblog, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/arsblog now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/arsblog. Thank you very much indeed to Jim Campbell. You can find him on Twitter at JimCampbellTFR, at JimCampbellTFR, and on the many and varied Football Ramble podcasts. Okay, there's another one in the can. We're getting towards the end of this series, this Arseblog 20 series. Still quite a bit more to get through, though, so join us for the next one. Until then, cheers. Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.